Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 13th, 2015. A known number of civilians attacked a military post in eastern Equatorial State.
We received some guns which were being looted by the civilian, about 6 guns, and the property and the properties of the soldiers were burned and some are looted.
And women activists say they want a fair representation in South Sudan's transitional government of national unity.
It's very important that all the IO and the government and the other political party to observe the 25% within the representations, make sure that women are involved in all the activities.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A county commissioner in eastern Equatorial State says angry civilians yesterday attacked and burned down a military post in Equatorial County, killing one soldier and stealing several weapons. Residents of Equatorial accused the army of killing an engineer who hails from the county. Authorities say they are sending a team of investigators to find out the cause of the violence. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from WOW.
Residents and local leaders say engineer Lopus Atanasio was shot in the head 3 kilometers from Equatorial County headquarters yesterday morning. The area is located southeast of the capital, Torit, near the border with Uganda. Residents who did not want to be identified says he and hundreds of other youths armed with rifles, machetes and other weapons traced the assailant's footprints to the barrack in Kapuata village. He says the youths asked the soldiers to help them identify the person who shot the local engineer. He says instead of helping them, the soldiers opened fire as they were leaving.
When we talk to them, then they deny. Then after when we are departing from there, then they start to shoot us with a machine gun.
The local resident who wants to remain anonymous because he is afraid for his life, says the armed youths then charged forward and forced the soldiers to flee. He says they then burned down the barracks. Officials and residents say the sounds of gunfire caused panic in Equatorial town, prompting residents to run and take cover in the neighboring mountains. Today, officials say calm has returned to the area. Eastern Equatorial State's local government minister, Lokai Iko, says authorities are on the scene and are investigating the engineer's death and the violence that followed.
Between the time they are following the blueprint and it headed to the army barracks, but it didn't enter into the army barracks. And before they investigate why the blueprint, yes, confusion erupted between the army and the civilians, in which 32 hearts of the army were burnt and one got killed.
Equatorial County Commissioner Peter Lokeng says the youth stole property from the barracks, including 6 AK-47s.
We received some guns which were being looted by the civilian, about 6 guns, and the property and the properties of the soldiers were burned and some are looted.
Lokeng says all the rifles have been recovered. He says the youths who burnt down the barracks acted out of rage because they were, as he put it, misinformed about the circumstances surrounding killings of the engineer outside Ikoto's town.
The police were informed to follow the footmark. The footmark were going direct to the barrack. In their barrack, without even knowing any information about the killing of the men.
Government Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says he is not aware of the incident.
I don't know that story. I did not get the report. You handle it at that level until we get the story tomorrow, maybe.
Both Iko and Lokeng are calling on the army and civilians in Equator to remain calm, saying the engineer's death and burning and looting of the barracks is under investigation. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WOW.
The 25,000-strong African Union standby force is on schedule to become operational by early 2016. The force is designed to be a rapid reaction force that will reduce dependence on international troops and shorten the reaction time to African crises. Analysts say that may be easier than said. VOA's Anita Paul has this report from Johannesburg.
Why does Africa need a standby army that can parachute into hotspots at a moment's notice? For South African Navy Captain Jaco Tinnison, the answer can be boiled down to just a few words. The Central African Republic, Mali.
Yes, the DRC, Sudan. Yes, it's specifically because of those interventions. All of them are United Nations interventions, except for the one in South Sudan, which is a hybrid between the AU and the UN. And the feeling is that Africa should form their own African force, and instead of getting the United Nations to come and do peace support operations.
The 5 Brigade African Standby Force, under the auspices of the African Union, aims to do just that. Tinnison is a military spokesman for the unit's most recent exercise, called Amani Africa 2. The war game scenario recently ended in South Africa. As countries like France grow more reticent about direct intervention in Africa, analysts say the continent needs its own force at the ready. But no one disputes this endeavor faces a major challenge, one that has dogged regional military interventions in Africa for years. Tinnison again.
It's money. It's always money. It's a very expensive, costly, and technical operation. So the big challenge will always remain money. But just looking at this exercise, because it was as real-life scenario as possible, it would indicate that it is possible. The strategic projection that was done by African Union countries themselves, and the whole exercise proved that it can be done.
Jaco Siller, who leads the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria, says the ASF faces another challenge, in that troops deployed to a particular country may not be perceived as neutral.
Regional countries, let's say in the case of Somalia, Ethiopia and Kenya, have a real interest and a political will to intervene. And Africa does not have the funding, the ability to be able to deploy out-of-area missions. In other words, deploy troops from, let's say, Rwanda into West Africa. So what inevitably happens is that the peacekeepers come from the immediate region. Not ideal, with all kinds of problems, but it is better than having nobody there.
South Africa is among the 11 African countries contributing troops, money and advisors to the force. Another 10 African countries have pledged to join in. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Women rights activists in South Sudan say they want more women appointed as ministers in the upcoming transitional government of national unity. Activists say that the percentage of women in the government is less than what the current constitution provides. Philip Thornaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Nyan Thorn, Jimmy's host, presented a paper on the role of women in peace building during a public lecture yesterday organized by the SAD Institute. She says women played a key role during the peace talks and must be actively involved in the peace deal. Ho says the agreement specifies the number of women to be appointed to the national government, but says nothing about how many women should be appointed to state governments.
It's very important that the IO and the government and the other political party to observe the 25% within their representations, make sure that women are involved in all the activities.
Who says military commanders are not the only ones who should be given prominent positions in the transitional government of national unity. She says women also played important roles during the conflict, both positive and negative.
Women doesn't have to be at the front line to fight, but women are key stakeholders within the conflict. Women take different roles. Definitely, there are women that we can say that they're actually at the front line.
Women activist Margaret Mathiang agrees. She says the transitional government will have 9 female ministers, including 4 to be nominated by the government and 3 by the SPLM-IO. She points out that number is lower than the 25% female representation in all government institutions as provided for in 2011 transitional constitution.
When a South Sudanese woman see a woman in a position of decision-making, she always feel proud that she's represented, and she can easily bring her issues reach out to that person who is in that responsibility so that her views can be heard.
Mathiang says the role of women will be particularly important for peace building in a post-conflict South Sudan.
When people started fighting, many women thought this is a war between, you know, the elephants. But the people who suffered most are women and children. So peace is a public demand, especially for women and children.
Agulde Chute, another women rights activist attending the lecture, says women should not limit their scope to political participation. Chute says the peace agreement is an opportunity to address issues affecting women in villages.
There is some women, for example, that were employed in the part of the NGO's organization, and then they were dealing with gender issues. So automatically these women will be dealing with gender issues, not because they were going there to do the gender issues, but it was a living for them and became activists, addressing the issues of where they were employed. But then there is some women who are activists because of the fact that they see there is something wrong.
Chute says women groups must expand their outreach and fight cultural norms that prevent girls from going to school, such as early child marriages.
And there is some women who have been killed. They were beaten to death, okay, trying to protect their young girls not to get married. But if there were, for example, activist women on that county or on that payam or on that city who will go and confront, for example, the strong, then the thing will be different. But then it is not different because I am working in the ministry, for example, to deal with gender. And then when they say this, government say this, then I will shut up.
Voila Aluel-Riak, a peace-building activist, says addressing women issues must start at childhood in every South Sudanese family.
When we look, women are the ones who take care and raise the children. We can divide roles to boys and girls equally, encourage our girls to go to school, encourage our boys to respect women, then I think these young children will grow up to become men and women who respect each other and treat each other equally.
Priscilla Joseph is a peace activist and associate professor of community medicine at the University of Juba. Joseph says if things are going to change, women must be in positions of power in South Sudan.
When you look at the impact of the war is on women and children, and unless we are there, the government or whoever is putting up the fund will end up compensating the very men who killed everybody, and they are now rewarded, they get the money and they disappear, and the women and children will still be sitting in those burn houses.
Joseph says the challenges facing women include the high rate of illiteracy, which prevents them from participating in leadership roles. But she says these challenges eventually will be addressed so long as there is a lasting peace in the country. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The ruling SPLM Party Secretariat puts its house in order once again. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What was your favorite childhood story?
Okay, my favorite childhood story is about this rabbit. My grandma used to tell me that rabbit is a very, very sharp animal. It's very creative because in every story you tell about rabbit and maybe other creature, they say rabbit always wins.
The story of the hyena and the goat. It's interesting because the hyena was the most wicked and the goat was weak compared to the hyena.
Comics, comic books. I like Superman comic books. That was my favorite. I like Superman because he was able to do stuff that other people would not ordinarily do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's ruling SPLM party swore in its newly appointed acting secretary general, Gemma Nunu Kumba, at a party headquarters today in Juba. Nunu was appointed to the position after the National Liberation Council decided to dissolve the secretariat. Waki Simon Wood reports for VOA from Juba that top party officials say Nunu must try to reunify the fragmented party.
The best of my ability.
The best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me.
German Onukumba repeats the words read by presidential advisor on legal affairs Lawrence Korobandi as she is sworn into office as president and party chairman Salva Kiir and deputy party chairman James Wani-Igga look on.
As I take up this responsibility as your acting secretary general, I call upon all the SPLM members inside and outside the country to join hands with me and cooperate with me in the work that we are going to embark on for the unity of our party, the unity of our country, and to sustain peace and development so we can meet the aspiration of our people, which is prosperity and development.
President Kiir appointed Kumba to be the ruling party's deputy secretary general late last month after the National Liberation Council dissolved the secretariat. Kumba acknowledges the road ahead will not be easy.
This time is challenging. There has been division. So our priority now is to put hands together to unite the party so that we can move forward. And we will do this within the Arusha Reunification Agreement and as directed by the leadership of this movement.
The conflict that broke in late 2013 split the SPLM into factions that eventually came to be known as the SPLM government, the SPLM in opposition, and SPLM former detainees. Following months of discussions in Tanzania, the three groups signed the Arusha Agreement with the goal of reuniting the three factions and reforming the party. President Kiir stressed the need for Kumba to reorganize the party beginning at the grassroots level before the other SPLM factions return to the government. But he says the government remains resolute in its commitment to implement the peace deal.
Even if it means tomorrow that when those who are fighting us come in and they are to be given positions in the government and you are told to get up from your chair and it is given to those who have been fighting us for the sake of our country, you will have to get up and allow somebody to come in.
Vice President James Wani-Igga told Kumba her most important tasks are to reunite and reorganize the party.
This got to take place as quickly as possible. Even if you can do today, the better. The next task definitely will be vigorously preparing for the upcoming extraordinary national convention. It is good our brothers who should be reporting anytime within this month might catch up with that. Whether these are brothers and sisters in the IO or in the FDs, they will partake.
Igga says Kumba should reduce the size of the secretariat so it once again becomes a viable organization. He says the previous secretariat of 240 officials, all based at party headquarters in Juba, was too big. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Wau, where Western Bahr al-Ghazal health officials say an ambulance service they introduced recently is saving lives of rural women. State authorities and residents say some women in rural villages could have died during childbirth if they did not have access to a health facility. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Wau.
36-year-old Rosa Angelo looks calm and relaxed as she lies on a bed in Wau Teaching Hospital's maternity ward. Angelo says, unlike during her previous childbirth, she feels this time she will get the care she needs if something goes wrong. Angelo says she gave birth to all of her five other children with the help of untrained traditional birth attendants. While admitting it was risky to give birth at home, Angelo says it was always difficult for her to get to a hospital because of the distance involved and a lack of transportation. An ambulance transported Angelo from the Wau County village of Ngohalima to the state capital, which is more than 100 kilometers away. Angelo says when she started to feel labor pains, her relatives took her to a health unit in the village. That is where a health worker dialed the ambulance call center number. She says she was surprised how quickly the ambulance arrived.
Without the ambulance, my situation was going to be bad. I have benefited from this service. The people at the health center in Ngohalima were able to call and it reached and carried me to this hospital.
Rosa Angelo's husband, Mauro Anthony, does not own a car. He says in the past, he could not get his pregnant wife to the hospital because there is no public transportation.
As citizens at the Payam and Boma, this is what we want, that during this moment we have access to this kind of services. Carrying pregnant women on a bicycle or footing as we did before is not good at all.
2 months ago, with the help of the Medical Charity International Medical Corps, or IMC, WOW Teaching Hospital introduced an emergency call center to help patients in emergency situations, especially pregnant women who cannot reach the main hospital. Health officials say since October, more than 80 pregnant women have been transported to the hospital by ambulance, possibly saving their lives. James Angelo, acting medical director at WOW Teaching Hospital, says over the last 2 months, they were able to have nearly 30 mothers delivered by cesarean section. He says before, lives were lost simply because patients had arrived too late to the hospital.
In this October, the major cases, we have 11 out of 80 patients, there were 11 were what? Obstructed labor. They were unable to deliver at home by midwives. And then they called the ambulance to go and bring the patient to the hospital for emergency cesarean section. But the rest of the cases represents malaria, chest infection, severe pneumonia, hypertension.
Dr. Isaac Leto, the Western Bahr Ghazal State Minister of Health, says the ambulance services should be used during emergencies to reduce the state's death rate, especially in cases of pregnant women.
I'm very pleased that those pregnant women who were asked to go in labor and they called us, they benefited from the theater, from the operations. So this is the purpose for it. It is more than a month now. The ambulance is in Juba and it's going to come.
South Sudan's maternal mortality rate remains one of the highest in the world. According to the United Nations Population Fund, at least 2,000 women die out every 10,000 live births. The poor roads and lack of trained health personnel are some of the contributing factors to this toll. The authorities here believe getting pregnant mothers quickly to the hospital could save life of both the child and the mother. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WOW.
Africa has long been a tough place for people with disabilities. But according to U.S. Special Advisor on International Disability Rights, things are changing. Again, here is VOA's Anita Powell from Johannesburg with this report.
At least 15% of the world's population is disabled, according to the World Health Organization and the World Bank. That's at least 1 billion people around the world. And says U.S. Special Advisor for International Disability Rights, Judith Heumann, stigma and unequal treatment add to the struggle of disabled people everywhere.
Frequently in countries in Africa and around the world, we see that disabled individuals are highly stigmatized. And that stigmatization, I believe, also is one of the significant causes of people being marginalized. When people do not believe that disabled individuals are capable of making meaningful contributions to their communities, then they're not necessarily looking at the types of laws and programs that need to be put in place.
Heumann says that some African nations have made progress. Kenya recently hosted the first General Assembly of the African Disability Forum. And Ethiopia's new light rail system in the capital was built with disability access in mind. But, she says, more African governments need to look at ways to put their money where their mouths are. One step, she suggests, is that governments look at hiring and promoting qualified people with disabilities to important positions. In 2010, she says, U.S. President Barack Obama issued an executive order calling for a closer look at disabled government employees. The result, she says, is that more and more disabled employees have joined the federal ranks.
I think it's very important to be willing to listen to what civil society is saying in relationship to stigma and marginalization that they may be facing, and for the government itself to play a very proactive role in appointing disabled people to important positions, looking at the government itself to look at what it can be doing to hire more disabled individuals.
And she says African governments should focus on the big picture by improving education, social services, and health care, even working to become better stewards of the environment. These issues don't just affect the disabled, she says. They affect us all. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
We move forward to hear a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus, editor Carol Van Damme.
Thank you, John. Eastern Equatoria state officials say angry civilians yesterday attacked and burned down a military barracks in Ikwoto, also known as Ikwotos County, killing one soldier and stealing several rifles in eastern Equatoria. Residents accused the army of killing a county engineer after they traced footprints of the suspected killer to the local barracks. State authorities say they have dispatched a team of investigators to determine the cause of the violence. Residents and local leaders say a local engineer was shot in the head some 3 kilometers from Ikwoto County headquarters yesterday morning. The area is located southeast of the capital, Torit, near the border with Uganda. A resident who did not want to be identified says he and hundreds of other youth armed with rifles, machetes, and other weapons traced the assailant's footprints to the barracks in Kapwata village. That resident, who said he didn't want to be identified for fear of his life, when asked to help them identify the person who shot the engineer, says the soldiers opened fire on them. He says one of the local officials says the angry youth were misinformed. South Sudan's ruling SPLM party swore in its acting secretary general at party headquarters today in Juba. Gemma Nuna Kumba was appointed to the position after the party's lawmaking organization decided to dissolve the party's secretariat. Top party officials say Nuna Kumba must try to reunite the fragmented party. Nuna Kumba called on all SPLM members inside and outside the country to cooperate with her for the sake of the party and to reunite the country. President Kiir appointed Nuna Kumba to be the ruling party's deputy secretary general late last month after the National Liberation Council dissolved the secretariat. He called on her to reorganize the party from the grassroots level on up. Nuna Kumba acknowledges that the road ahead won't be easy, but called on all party members to work together to reunify the party. And finally, the 25,000-strong African standby force is on track to become operational by early 2016. The ASF, as it's known, is designed to be a rapid reaction force that will reduce dependence on international troops and shorten the reaction time to African crises. But it remains to be seen whether that will, in fact, happen. South African Navy Captain Yaku Tinason says hotspots like the Central African Republic, Mali, the DRC, and Sudan have all seen United Nations interventions. He says, as for the one in South Sudan, a hybrid between the African Union and the UN responded. He says the feeling is that Africa should send their own African force instead of bringing the United Nations in to come and do peace support operations. He says the 5-brigade African standby force under the auspices of the African Union will aim to do just that. As countries like France become more reticent about sending in peacekeepers to Africa, many analysts say the continent needs its own force ready to go. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Nani Ongere by Colonel Mido.
Never knew.
We have been listening to Colonel Mido with that song, Nani Ongere. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a good weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.